It didn't matter what it could have been, it was over. And soon Levi would be gone. If she remembered him afterward, he would be the one who'd brought her to Vianca, the boy she would have been better off without. Last, he thought about new reins, and that pain hurt the most. He'd left a depressing life behind to build something better in this city. He'd bet everything he had in the game, and he'd lost. But the city wouldn't grieve for him. The city would find some new con man, some new boy who called himself Lord. And the city would play again. Levi spent the first 30 minutes of his last 2 hours wiping tears from his eyes, rooted to the same spot in the alley he'd fled to from Luckluster. If only the other gangsters could see him now, the Iron Lord, crying when he was about to die. Levi pictured his gravestone from the visions. If there was ever a time to cave in and pray to the faith, as his mother always had, this was the moment. But beneath the casino district's skyline of smoke, crouched in an alley reeking of trash and piss, Levi couldn't believe that any higher power cared about his fate. A familiar voice drifted out of the shadows.
"It's you."
Levi instinctively reached for the pistol in his pocket, tensing as Ches Phillips stepped into the moonlight.
"What are you doing here?" Levi demanded.
They were a long way from Ironland. Ches grinned slyly.
"I'm making my way back to Old Town. Never imagined I'd run into you."
Levi couldn't believe he'd have to spend the last hours of his life with Ches, of all people. Maybe he was already dead. Maybe this was hell.
"You should cross your heart when you see me," Ches said.
His forehead and neck peeled from an old sunburn, and he had an impressive black eye and walked with a limp in his step. Ches looked terrible, and this gave Levi a surge of pleasure, despite knowing that he looked no better himself.
"There are a lot of things I'd like to do when I see you," Levi growled. "Crossing my heart is not one of them." "I should have killed you when I had the chance," Ches hissed,
clearly forgetting the part where Jack had beaten the muck out of him before he could. Ches took out his knife and flipped it between his fingers.
"I wouldn't bother. The Torrens are after me, and they'll be pretty upset if you kill me first."
Ches laughed, still playing with his knife.
"I'm not surprised the Torrens want you dead. You're a real pain in the arse. We've been better off without you."
Levi held back a wince. Despite all Ches's bravado, those words were probably true.
"I'm not helpless," he thought. "If I'm going to die, I'm going to do it fighting. I'll be no one's plaything." "That's a shame," Levi answered.
"Oh yeah? Why?"
"Because I'm going to take back my crown, right now."
"What's the point?"
Ches grunted. He flipped his knife again, his tell. He was nervous. Both of them were in muck shape, but if Ches won last time and was uneasy now, he couldn't have been doing well. What trouble had he run into in Levi's absence?
"I thought you were already a dead man."
That was exactly why Levi wanted to fight, so he could die with some dignity, and his title returned to him.
"I've still got a little fight left in me."
Levi made a show of taking off his jacket and rolling up his sleeves, exposing his Iron Lord tattoos. Then he emptied the gun from his pocket and laid it on the ground beside him.
"So maybe we can do it properly this time. No interruptions."
Ches flipped his blade in the air and caught it, as if his trick scared Levi. Nothing could scare him now, when he had nothing left to lose. Or maybe he was only Schatz, running from one death into the clutches of another.
"You're sick if you think you can win," Ches growled. "If it weren't for Jack, you'd be dead right now."
"If it weren't for me, you'd be dead too, floating in the Brent where I first found you."
Ches's jaw locked. Levi found most of the Irons that way, desperate and near death. It was why he'd thought they were loyal to him. Now he knew it was also why they hated him.
"Why would you chance walking around Scarland? Seems kinda desperate. Just how well are the Irons faring without me?"
Ches lurched forward. He was about 3 times as fast as Levi, but now Levi knew better than to try to outmaneuver him. He jumped out of the way and immediately went for Ches's feet, grabbing his shins and yanking him to the ground. Ches tumbled on top of him, and his head smacked the cobblestones. Levi wrestled him onto his back, then he pinned his arms down. Chez's knife flew from his hand and landed a few feet away with a clatter.
"I don't owe you anything," Chez said, his voice slurred from hitting his head.
Blood stained his brown hair.
"I'll never ask to be saved." "Everybody's asking to be saved," Levi answered.
As Chez gradually regained his senses, he struggled more against Levi's grip.
"Even if I don't kill you right now," Levi snarled, "I win. I outfought you. That makes me your lord again."
Chez spat in his face.
"Like hell it does."
All of the week's anger and frustration getting the better of him, Levi summoned his talent and let his skin warm. Chez screamed as steam rose from his wrists where Levi's fingers were wrapped around them. His skin began to blister, pink and oozing and raw.
"I'm not gonna kill you, Chez, but maybe these shackles will remind you that I own you, no matter how far away you run."
When he let go, rings of raw flesh circled Chez's wrists, raised and inflamed, more gruesome than Levi had intended. Chez howled more. Holding Chez's arms down with his legs, Levi paused to savor the moment. He took a triumphant swig from his flask. Levi stood, closing his eyes to savor the victory. But when he opened them again, he caught a glimpse of his reflection in the window, and startled. The look on his face. He was the spitting image of Vianca. Click. In barely a moment's time, Chez had pressed the barrel of the abandoned gun to Levi's head. Levi grabbed his arm and tried to shove him away, but his third held steady.
"Back down from being the lord, pup," he demanded, panting. "Or I swear I'll paint the wall with your thoughts."
In a real challenge, you couldn't shoot your lord. No one inherited the oath from a bullet. Every gangster knew that. But Chez didn't need Levi to remind him.
"As far as I'm concerned, this never happened," Chez hissed. "No witnesses."
So Chez would kill him after all. Levi would die here, another lord lost to these streets.
"Any last words?" Chez asked.
Levi couldn't think of any. None that hadn't been said before or wouldn't be said again. But Levi still had one last card up his sleeve. He'd never swallowed his mouthful of gambler's ruin. He spit it out, snapped his fingers, and a roar of fire erupted between him and Chez. First there was a scream, then a gunshot. Levi was already on the ground, his ears ringing, eyes closed, arms clutching his broken rib. Something thudded to the cobblestones a few feet away, but it took several moments for Levi to regain his composure and look. Chez lay on his back. His fingers reached for the knife he'd lost earlier, but he was clearly in too much pain to move. The skin on his face, neck and chest had burned clean through, exposing a mess of blood and bone and tissue. He made a gargling noise, and tears glistened in the corners of his left eye. The right one was gone, now an empty socket filled with crimson and black, wet and bulging. Levi gagged, both at Chez's appearance and the smell of it all, the burnt cloth and burnt flesh. He stood frozen under the terror and hatred of Chez's glare. He wondered if Chez would die. Instead, he lay there, grinding his teeth, the blistered parts of his chest still heaving up and down. He shook all over, and bits of spit dribbled down his chin.
"Maybe you should kill him," a voice in Levi's head told him. "Maybe that would be better than this."
But he wasn't sure Chez would die. If Levi killed him, would it be mercy or would it be murder?
"It already is murder," he thought. "You did this. He nearly killed you. Yet you were the one who asked to fight. He was your friend once."
In the end, Levi retrieved his gun and left Chez there for someone else to find. He didn't know if that was the right decision or the cowardly one, but the longer he watched him, the more he hated himself.
"He doesn't have to die. Only you do."
After he finished throwing up against an alley wall, Levi made his way back to Luckluster. There was still no point in running. This was the last chance he had to write his legacy, and no matter how terrified he was, at least Levi would be remembered for how he didn't beg. Luckluster's red lights sparkled all the way down the street. Levi sighed and leaned against an empty motor car, taking in the glory of the casino district. Someone tapped his arm. Levi jumped, brandishing his gun, and tripped over the curb. It was Lola. She was dressed as she usually was, in her top hat and leather boots.
"What do you want?"
he asked. She was awfully far away from Doveland, and Luckluster didn't seem her type of haunt.
"We thought you were inside," she breathed.
"Who's we?"
"Me! And N!"
Levi frowned. N shouldn't have any idea where he was. Levi hadn't told her about the scheme. It was the one thing he'd done right. So why was she here?
"The Yanka sent her to save you," Lola explained. "And to kill Cedric Torin."
Levi's heart screeched to a halt. He'd had it all planned. His death on his terms. He'd have no one else's blood on his hands tonight. Especially not N's.
"Where is she?" he rasped.
"You just missed her."
Lola glanced worriedly at the red neon lights. Levi hadn't thought she gave a muck what happened to N, but clearly he'd been mistaken.
"She's already inside. She's looking for you."
Levi didn't bother responding as he sprinted toward Luckluster, where his killers were waiting for him. N. Lola had lied about her driving skills. They sped down the streets of Deadman District, the motor car swerving and skidding through every turn. N white-knuckled the door handle each time Lola slammed the brakes.
"You said we needed to get there fast,"
Lola pointed out. At this point, N would just be thankful if they got there alive. After narrowly missing several cars, road signs, and pedestrians, they screeched to a halt a block away from Luckluster. Lola pulled something black and silky out of her pocket. N's mask from scrap market.
"You might need this."
She slipped it into N's concealed pocket, beside the leather box with the poison.
"Knock him dead,"
Lola said cheerfully. N grimaced.
"Really? That's distasteful."
The lights of Trop Street danced around her, flashing in no particular pattern. They made her feel the way she had after drinking those snake eyes at the Sauterelle.
"Better him than you,"
Lola said gravely. "If I'm not out by 11, N paused before repeating her mother's oft-used phrase. "Then I'm dead." Lola nodded solemnly.
"Be careful."
And N knew that she meant it. N took a deep breath, shoved down the storm raging in her insides, and walked down the block and through the revolving doors. Where Bianca had decorated St. Mors to resemble an old miser palace, all gaudy opulence and vintage luxuries, the Torrens had opted for New Rain's famous burlesque sinfulness. The staff wore uniforms easily mistaken for lingerie. Red carpet lined the floor and stairwell, darkened by dirty footprints, and scarlet lights blinked against the black and red striped walls. It reminded her of a funhouse. Even the jazz band played a carnival tune that beckoned players to contortionist shows and roulette tables. N checked the gambling rooms first, then the theater, the ballroom. Neither Cedric nor Levi were anywhere to be found. Maybe she was already too late. As she dashed around the corner, N collided with a man with his back turned, his white button-down a canvas for the dancing shadows and crimson lights.
"I apologize, I didn't see..."
The stranger spun around. He smelled faintly of citrus cologne, and he had a fading black eye and complimentary ace and spade tattoos on both his arms. Any relief she felt at finding Levi safe quickly vanished. If Cedric Torin sighted Levi, then N had little idea how she could save him.
"Levi," she croaked. "You need to get out of here."
"No, you need to get out of here."
He grabbed both of her arms and pulled her close, nearly knocking her into his chest in his urgency. He backed the two of them into an alcove off the lobby, away from the bustle of the crowd. N's back pressed against a door leading to a coat room.
"You don't understand."
She tried to shake him off, but he only held her firmer.
"Cedric Torin,
I know why you're here."
She could smell the bourbon on his breath.
"I can't let you do it."
"Why not?"
she hissed.
"I'm trying to help you."
"I'm not letting you get yourself killed. Especially not over me."
"It's not only you, it's..."
She tried to say Bianca, but the Omerta caught the name on her tongue. And, of course, there was something else. The cold, angry hurt inside her that wanted to end Cedric Torin and put a stop to the shadow game forever.
"Let me help you,"
she urged. Levi swallowed, then gently tucked a strand of hair behind her ear. The touch was delicate, hesitant, as if they had time for such tender gestures.
You can't help me. You're the one who needs to leave.
Didn't he know her better than that by now? She had thrown everything away to save someone she loved before, and she would do it again for him. I thought we were in this together, she murmured. You and me.
Not in this. This has always been my problem.
His gaze moved down her dress, and he wore a look somewhere between longing and pain. She leaned into him, and her hand found its way into his. Her head felt dizzy from the flashing lights and nearness of him, but even as her heart urged her to move closer, her mind compelled her to resist. The expression on Levi's face scared her, not because of the desire in his eyes, the desire she shared as well, but the desperation. As his free hand moved around her waist, his other pinning hers to the wall, En realized he really believed that this was his last night, his last chance. This wasn't simply attraction. This was him attempting to leave this world without regret. He bent low until his forehead pressed against hers, and the space between them felt negative and infinite all at once. Her heart stirred, begging her to surrender.
"Promise me," he whispered. "Promise me you'll be safe."
She couldn't promise that. Vianca had given her orders, and En intended to see them through. There would be more nights spent with Levi Glazier. This wasn't their last chance.
"We won't die tonight," she swore silently instead.
"Promise me,"
he repeated, and she felt his breath against her lips. She squeezed his hand. "You asked me to trust you once. Now I'm asking you to trust me." His expression faltered.
"I won't let you. Please!"
Breathless, she slid out of his grasp and disappeared into the crowd before he could catch her, praying she hadn't made a heartbreaking mistake. En followed the pull of the Omerta towards the bar, where it whispered to her that she would find her mark. Her hands were clammy with sweat, her chest tight with fear. She would have to face Cedric Torren again, him and the terrible, nauseating way he looked at her. After a few moments, she stopped to glance back at Levi for a last push of courage. He was gone.
"No," she whispered.
She shoved her way back to the alcove, but Levi was nowhere to be found. Maybe he'd left, just as she'd pleaded. En should have felt relieved, but bullets of worry buried themselves in her chest. This was not the night to make assumptions. Had they found him already? Had they killed him? She had no time to search. The Omerta was steering her toward the bar, and the clock was ticking. Whether or not Levi was safe, she would find out from Cedric Torren, and she would finish what she'd come here to do. The room was dark and hazy with smoke. A single figure sat at the bar, one with broad shoulders and slicked back hair. Cedric Torren caught her eye and gave her an inviting smile. All at once she was back in the St. Maur's Theatre. Cedric's hand had found its way to her thigh, and her mind had found its way somewhere else as she waited for the poison to work, waited for the night to end. Cedric's mind, too, had seemed somewhere else, fabricating reasons to lure her away, imagining the things he would do in the dark, the way he'd tell her she'd wanted this, the secrets and shame he'd convince her to keep. She'd seen it all in his eyes then, and the same look was there now. En reminded herself how far she'd come since that night. She was not Vianca's doll. She'd walked into the dead man district and emerged a lord. She carried poison in one pocket and a gun in the other. She was a blade, disguised as a girl. Taking a deep breath to calm herself, she slid onto the stool beside him. "Hello, Cedric," she said. He inspected her dark lipstick and slip of a dress. His eyes traced over her face, her chest, the rest of her body. She could see the calculations in his head, trying to guess how old she truly was, and whether he would still have her anyway.
"Emma Salter," he said, all smiles and snares. "I didn't think I'd see you again. You spend an awful lot of time in casinos for such a young lady."
It was so easy to slip back into that role. It felt like retreating to a different part of herself, a place where she didn't need to think, didn't need to feel.
"You don't look happy to see me," she said, feigning offense.
"You look awfully different."
"I'm trying to impress," she said. "You were right. Bianca wouldn't hire me. I thought I would dress the part this time."
"You're asking me for a job?"
She couldn't tell if she was fooling him. Everyone in the city had a perfect poker face. Lying was more of a necessity than a skill in New Reigns.
"We danced last time," she reminded him. "It seemed a sort of audition."
"You're awfully ambitious."
He placed his hand under her chin and lifted it up. Her stomach twisted into a knot, and she fought the urge to slap his fingers away. If the bartender wasn't hovering so close by, she'd pull out the syringe now. Anything to prevent him touching her.
"I'm sure we can discuss some type of arrangement," he said. "There's a private room here no one's using."
A trap, she knew. But she needed to get him alone. There was no other way.
"That would be great," she said.
He waved away his men, then whispered something to the bartender that she couldn't hear. The bartender gave her a pitying look before walking away, and N clenched a fist behind her back in response. She wasn't the first girl. Everyone in this casino was complicit.
"Come on,"
Cedric said, putting his hand on the small of her back. It felt nothing like Levi's hand. His touch had felt warm and protective. Cedric's felt wrong. They entered a small dining room. He pulled out a chair for her at one end of a glossy table. Like the rest of the casino, the decorations were red and black. Red carpet, black iron chandelier, red candles, black place settings. Anne settled into her chair, wondering just how many people had watched her walk in, how well they'd seen her face. If they found Cedric dead here later, would they remember her? She couldn't kill him yet, however, not without knowing where Levi was.
"I sent the bartender for a few drinks," Cedric said, winking. "Don't worry. I won't tell anyone."
"Oh, are you celebrating anything tonight?"
"You could say that. I managed to catch a criminal who was scamming a lot of people for a long time."
Levi. While En's heart hammered, the bartender returned with their drinks, and she took hers, a sparkling pink liquid in a glass with a lollipop dunked inside. He handed Cedric a gambler's ruin.
"I helped a lot of people. Maybe even got myself a few votes in the next election."
To avoid responding, En took a sip of her drink. She couldn't help noticing how delicious it tasted, sweet as sin.
"Do you like it?"
he asked, indicating the drink.
"It's called a lollipop lick."
Still trying to feign politeness, she nodded shakily and set down the glass. His smile widened.
"What's going to happen to this criminal? Please, please let him still be alive."
Her skin felt flushed all of a sudden. She was breaking under her nerves. Sweat rolled down her back, and she wished this dress wasn't so tight on her hips.
"He's to be executed. I arranged it myself."
Cedric licked his lips.
"Why so curious?"
"No reason."
She raised her glass and prayed he didn't see it shaking.
"Cheers to your success."
Cedric raised his glass and clinked it with hers. Then, to N's shock and discomfort, he took his hand in hers. It was such a little, unassuming touch, but to her, any touch from him felt repulsive. Every move he made was a rehearsed act, designed to seduce, to ensnare.
"You know," he said, "you're an excellent dancer, but I had no idea you were also so talented in acrobatics."
"What?"
Her heart sped up in panic. Did he know?
"Don't be coy, my dear."
His eyes slithered over her once again, and En flinched.
"I saw your show, and you were quite dazzling. One of the other acrobats told me your name is En Selter. You should have corrected me. I've been saying your name wrong this whole time."
En wrenched her hand away from his and let it creep toward her pocket. Her lie had unraveled, but it wouldn't matter for much longer. She'd finish this right now. But her hands trembled as she slid the case out,
and she struggled to get a grip on it with her sweaty fingers. Thankfully, he didn't notice her fumbling beneath the table.
I searched for you that night, but I couldn't find you.
He leaned forward again, took her other hand again, smiled again. She was too dazed to push him off. Her cheeks burned, yet she was cold, shivering from the coolness of her sweat. Her vision darkened and lightened like she'd stood up too fast, though she hadn't moved an inch from her seat. This couldn't be normal. Couldn't just be stress or alcohol. Amid her haze, she tried to focus on the black case in her hand. One puncture. That was all it would take to end him.
I never had the chance, but I wanted to find you, Cedric continued. To buy you another drink.
En's eyes flickered to the lollipop lick.
Are you feeling all right?
He asked, not sounding the least concerned.
You look a little pale.
Then En realized what he'd done. Her chest heaved bit by bit, as if a crank needed to pry it open to inhale. This couldn't be happening.
I guess it's just the effects kicking in, he said casually.
Her balance veered, and Cedric placed his hand on her shoulder to steady her, as if he still had her best interests at heart. He'd drugged her. How naive of her to take a sip of that drink, to believe even for a moment that she'd had him fooled.
Don't worry, it won't kill you, he assured her. You'll wake up soon enough. I wouldn't want you to miss the fun.
Her grip slackened. The leather case slid back into her pocket. Her shoulder hit the edge of the table, but she barely felt any pain, only nausea. Her thoughts were thicker than grime. She knew something was wrong. She was in danger. Levi was in danger. But for the life of her, she couldn't remember why. The man in front of her smiled. She couldn't recall his name either. A not quite handsome smile. He reached into his jacket and pulled out something shiny.
Brought you a gift, he whispered.
He tucked the silver rectangle into her hand. A man in a jester's hat grinned up at her from the face of the card. She looked back at the man to ask what it was. She knew it, but couldn't remember. But he and everything else were gone. Levi. This was Levi's last night to live, and he hadn't even gotten a kiss goodbye. The black, silky hemline of En's dress disappeared into the crowd, and he cursed under his breath. He wouldn't let her do this. He started pushing through the lackluster patrons to follow her, but was quickly blocked by two of Cedric's men. As Levi tried to slip past, he stumbled over one of their canes.
Watch it,
one of the men said, catching Levi by the arm. His front tooth glinted gold. Something sharp stabbed Levi in the neck. He yelped, then felt his body go slack. Another arm slid around his middle, hoisting him up. Levi fought to move, tried to lift his head to search for En's black dress, but he was paralyzed. Even his mind was going numb. Someone nearby gasped.
He's just a drunk, a voice said. A real lightweight, this one.
All at once, the red lights went dark. Levi woke sitting against a stone pillar, his hands tied behind him, an ache in his lower stomach. A man stood over him, presumably having just kicked him awake. He was well over 6 feet tall and half as wide. Levi moaned and pulled at the ropes binding him to the pillar, but they only scratched his wrists.
"Rise and shine," his captor said.
A hint of gold flashed as he smiled, revealing teeth that were pointed like a shark. And Levi realized it was the same man from Luckluster.
Almost thought you'd missed the party. That would have been a right shame.
One light bulb dangled above them, and from the looks of the room, they were in a basement. The cold cement walls reeked of mold, and a distant laughter echoed from a wooden staircase that led upstairs.
Where am I? The House of Shadows.
Levi's skin crawled. So this was the haunted mansion where the Phoenix Club played the shadow game. The haunted part, he reminded himself, was just a superstition. Levi had imagined this place as more luxurious, decked out with black velvet and silver opulence. But his surroundings looked much like the basement of any shambled home in Old Town. It took him a moment to remember he was here to die. that he hadn't been able to stop N from disappearing into the crowd at Lackluster. He swallowed down a wave of panic. Where was she now?
No, don't worry, Shark said. I got your jacket and hat over there with your invitation.
He nodded to a pile of Levi's belongings a few feet away. His pistol and the shadow card gleamed on top.
That's generous of you. Don't be smart. I mean to prepare you for the game, but I've been told not to touch your pretty face.
Shark leaned down to examine Levi's black eye.
You're already fairly roughed up. Where have you been hurt?
My right leg, Levi said.
Under broken rib. Well, I'll be sure to find some new spots then.
Levi braced himself as Shark grabbed beneath his arms and lifted him like a bag of straw.
It's a lot easier if you stand up, he said,
then threw a staggering punch at Levi's shoulder. It dislocated with a pop. Levi shouted and fell forward, caught by the ropes tying him to the pillar. Every breath he took ached. The man raised his enormous boot and kicked Levi's hip bone, not hard enough to fracture, but definitely enough to bruise. Shark kicked him once in each shin as Levi sputtered.
Nothing personal, you know. I don't even know your name. It's Levi, he breathed.
Shark punched his chest, forcing the air out of him and hurting his ribs enough to make Levi scream. The force of it sent his body colliding with the pole behind him.
I didn't say I wanted your name.
He slammed his fist into Levi's left thigh. Levi had reached a point where he felt himself retreating. It was an old, familiar feeling of curling into that cold place in his mind, where the aches of his body and heart couldn't follow. Though the place was meant for comfort and self-preservation, it had its costs. Each time he returned there, he left pieces of himself behind, pieces he sometimes never found again. When he left home, he thought he'd left this place behind him as well. He leaned unsteadily against the pillar and concentrated on reality, on the pain all over, on the dim overhead light, on the smell of mold and the taste of blood. The final blow got him in the side of the neck. Levi's head knocked against the pillar. He slumped over and puked for the second time that night. Even as he vomited whatever remained in his stomach, he was both in the basement and that somewhere else, here and not here. When Levi finished retching, Shark cut the rope binding him.
Don't bother running, you know you won't get far.
Levi didn't think he could run at all if he tried. His hands fell limply to his side, and Shark handed him his suit jacket and hat. Levi took it with dread, knowing it meant the night's festivities were about to begin.
Now, let me get a look at you.
Shark's eyes ran up and down Levi's body.
Oh, my mistake.
Before Levi could brace himself, Shark put two hands on his shoulder and shoved it back into its socket. Levi screamed and staggered back.
I'll be keeping this gun of yours.
Shark pocketed the pistol.
But here's your invitation.
He slipped the shadow card into Levi's breast pocket and patted it with a malicious grin.
Look sharp. Now we go upstairs. That's where the fun is.
Fun for him, maybe. The only thing waiting for Levi was death. Shark pushed him up the stairs, and Levi's bones ached with each step, so painful he needed to bite his tongue to keep from crying out. A fog of cigar smoke greeted them at the landing, and they entered a dark room with all black furniture that matched Levi's original vision for the House of Shadows. Two men lay on couches in the corner, too transfixed by the women in front of them to notice Levi and his captor. The women giggled teasingly and played with their transparent slips, their legs miles long in silver shoes and heels like razors.
You know, Levi wheezed, this isn't as bad as I thought.
Shark grunted and shoved him up another flight of stairs.
Is Cedric Torren here?
Levi asked, though he doubted that Shark had news about whatever had happened to Cedric and N.
Never knew him to miss a party, he replied.
Each time Levi heaved one leg painfully in front of the other, he thought, this is one of my last steps. He knew he should feel terrified. Earlier he had. But now that he was here, the House of Shadows felt too surreal to warrant anything but numbness. Maybe the effects of the sedative hadn't fully worn off. Maybe he was still in that someplace else, trying to protect himself from reality. They entered his execution room. 10 people sat around a long felt-top table, and others spectated from chaises in the room's corners.
Her skin had a grey cast to it, like the skin of a peach gone shriveled and mouldy. And it was impossible to guess their ages. They looked neither young nor old, neither alive nor dead. They stared at Levi with empty eyes, their expressions still. All that moved was the shadows across their faces, flickering in the light of the metal candelabra. The black and silver striped walls made Levi feel as though he were entering a cage.
"Our first guest has finally arrived," one man said.
His face was long, and his chin hooked outward into a point. His mostly grey hair was parted down the centre, sharpening his severe widow's peak. Levi had seen his picture before, of course, but the black and white newspapers failed to convey that Chancellor Malcolm Semper was equally grey-cast and haunting in person. Shark left, and the thump-thump of his feet on the stairs echoed around the room. Levi scanned the faces of the Phoenix Club for Cedric, but none of them were him.
"Levi Glazier, why don't you take a seat?"
Semper gestured to the chair beside him.
"Where's Cedric?"
Levi asked.
"Mr. Torrin isn't a member of the Phoenix Club, so he doesn't participate in our game."
Levi limped to his chair and settled into the rigid leather seat. Was this where Alfaro had sat when she died? Or Gabrielle Dondelaire when she won? The only remaining empty chair was directly across from him.
"We will explain the rules once our final guest arrives," Semper said.
So Levi didn't even warrant a solo execution. He wondered who else the Phoenix Club had decided to play with tonight.
"We weren't expecting another player," said a woman Levi recognized as Senator Josephine Fennis.
Her wild silver hair draped across her body down to her waist. She was Semper's right hand, and the woman who personally oversaw the execution of the previous miser royal family of New Rains. Even the children.
"I received a last-minute message," Semper explained. "Mr. Torren feels he has more to offer us. He's very eager to please."
Levi's heart stuttered at the mention of Cedric. What had happened between him and N? Did she finish what she'd come to do?
"Who is the player?"
Fennis asked.
"The message didn't say," Semper answered. "Only to expect him here at 2.
Levi had little idea of the time, only a guess that it was almost midnight. He heard the ticking of a clock in the back of his mind, counting down to the 10th day, counting down to his end. He tried to push away his concern over N. He needed all his concentration. Once upon a time, Gabrielle Dondelaire had won this game. He needed to forget about all the legends, all the nightmares. The Shadow Game was a game like any other. There were winners and there were losers. He wasn't helpless. He wasn't finished. He needed to remind himself who he was. If anyone in this city had a chance of outplaying unbeatable odds, it was the Iron Lord. N. N's head smacked against glass, jolting her awake. Her eyes flickered open briefly, but glimpsing Cedric's face, she immediately squeezed them shut again. She heard a door open and a warm summer wind kissed her skin. She was in a motor car, but her surroundings were slanted awkwardly to the left. The noise of Trop Street was gone. The events of the evening gradually returned to her. Levi's disappearance, the drugged drink, the shadow card. And she held her breath to keep from crying out. Cedric cursed and climbed out of the car. The door closed. She eased her eyes open. Voices murmured outside, their tones escalating. Judging from that and the tilted angle of the car, they must have been stuck in a ditch. The windows were darkened with screens, so N had no way of confirming this, nor any idea where in the city they were. She quietly reached for the abandoned suit jacket on the seat in front of her. Inside, she found her revolver from earlier, which Cedric had stolen. Rather than take it and alert him that she was awake, she emptied it of bullets and slipped them in her pocket, where the leather case with the injection was still carefully concealed among folds of satin. The shadow card was sitting on her lap, the face of the fool laughing up at her. It was the invitation card, she knew, but whose? Had Cedric meant it for her, or was he only delivering her Levi's?
She didn't think Cedric knew N and Levi had any connection. Only two things were clear now. N still needed to kill Cedric Torrin, and she needed to stop the shadow game. Voices. Footsteps. The seat tilted forcefully. The engine roared, and the motor car jolted forward out of the ditch. The door opened. She closed her eyes, feigning unconsciousness. Someone, Cedric probably, sat opposite her, bringing the odors of sweat and cigar smoke with him. As the car resumed its course, she didn't move for another 10 minutes. N desperately hoped he couldn't hear her heart pounding. When the car finally stopped, Cedric lifted something to her nose. The stench of ammonia made her lurch.
"Sleep well, doll."
"Where are we?" She forced her voice to slur, as if she was just coming to.
"A place known as the House of Shadows."
A malicious grin spread across his face, sending dread seeping across N's skin.
"You might say it's the best gambling in the city."
Cedric opened the door and stepped outside. Over his shoulder, N caught her first glimpse of the House of Shadows. The name couldn't be more appropriate. The dark stone of its exterior looked as rough and jagged as a cavern wall, and though lights danced in the windows, they were muted behind fishnet curtains. A faint bass rumbled in the air, and a flute whispered a mournful melody into the night. Beyond the tall evergreen trees lining the driveway, the city's skyline glittered in the distance. Zula's warning whispered through her mind, "More than anything, stay away from the House of Shadows." On her first day in New Reigns, Levi had told her that the Phoenix Club orchestrated the revolution and the deaths of all the misers, so N understood the risks of entering their lair. But the fear she'd heard in Zula's voice that day, it sounded as though there was more to the House of Shadows than simply politics and history. Whatever dangers awaited her inside, it was something more, something N had never known before. Cedric handed her an envelope.
"Take this to Malcolm Semper."
She sucked in a breath. The Chancellor? He was the most powerful man in the Republic. And the leader of the Phoenix Club. Her heart clenched as she took the envelope. He was the man who had murdered lords.
"They're expecting you," Cedric told her.
"Expecting me for what?"
"For the game."
Anne's breath caught. At the edges of her vision she glimpsed shadows. The ghost of Gabrielle Dondelaire, the silhouette of lords. They had both tried to protect her, but in the end they would all face the same fate.
"Unfortunately," Cedric continued, "I won't be able to watch. I'm not a member of the Phoenix Club. But rest assured, I'll be exploring the other entertainments the House of Shadows has to offer."
She let out a shiver as she slipped the envelope in her pocket, unsure if Cedric was giving her an opportunity to save Levi or her own death certificate.
"They don't know who you are," he told her,
a grin playing on his features. He was relishing this.
"They don't particularly care. Times are changing, repeating, so they claim, and so they're playing again."
"Playing because of the times?" Cedric wasn't making sense.
"There's a price to keep the devil away when the devil comes knocking."
He grabbed her by the wrist and pulled her out of the motor car. She stumbled onto the grass.
"Tonight that price is you."
As far as N was concerned in that moment, the city was full of devils. Cedric Torrin, Vianca Augustine, Malcolm Semper. She'd paid a price to all of them already. Very suddenly, Cedric slapped her across the face. N gasped and backed protectively against the side of the motor car, her cheeks stinging.
"That was for St. Moore's," he snapped.
He stepped closer to her, and fear bubbled up in her throat. She glanced around, but there was no one nearby to witness, not even their driver. They were alone. This was her chance. But his glare rooted her to the spot.
"Black Maiden is a rather uncommon flower," he said. "Imported, untraceable. Neither of the families own it. Where did you get it?"
She could still hear Bianca's words in her mind.
This cannot be traced back to me.
The Omerta grasped a bony hand around her throat, cutting off her air. He took a threatening step closer, and then instinctively lifted her arms to protect her face.
Who are you working for?
She could do nothing but stay silent.
His fingers brushed a strand of hair behind her ear, sending millions of chills of warning down her back.
I won't ask nicely again, he hissed.
His fingers slid through her hair and squeezed. He jerked her head back, and tears formed in En's eyes from the pain. She slipped her hand into her pocket and fingered the edges of the leather case.
Is it Vianca?
He pulled her hair harder, and she whimpered. The Omerta forced her to shake her head.
Tell me.
No one... She lied, slowly sliding the case out of her pocket. In some ways, that was the truth. Vianca might have given the order, but if she killed Cedric Torrin, she would do it for Levi. He slammed her head against the car door. She cried out, stars spinning in her vision. The case dropped silently onto the grass. Please no, she thought.
You're lying, he said.
He relaxed his grip on her hair and instead slid his hand to her throat. His chest pressed against hers, and she tried to stretch away, to put as much distance between him and her as possible, but his hip bone was jammed painfully into her side. He won't kill you, she told herself. The Phoenix Club is expecting you. He already said so.
That didn't mean he wouldn't hurt her first.
His grip on her throat tightened. She let out an involuntary sputter.
You will die tonight, he growled.
While he spoke, she managed to lift her calf up and hooked her finger around the strap of her heel. She carefully slid it off her foot, trying not to lose her grip on it. She was dizzy from lack of air.
It will be long. It will be painful. The last time there were two players, the Phoenix Club didn't get to have their fun. I told them this time they could have it with you.
En knew exactly which game Cedric was referring to, the night Gabrielle had played to save her daughter's life. As anger flooded through her, En squeezed the heel and, with all the force she could muster, jabbed it into his eye. Cedric howled, letting go of her and covering his eye with his hands. Bloody tears dripped down his cheek.
You bitch! He snarled.
En shoved him away and frantically bent down, breathing heavily and feeling around for the leather case. She found it and slid off the lid. She had only just gotten a grip on the syringe when Cedric kicked her in the side, sending her sprawling. Then he grabbed her by the front of her dress and hoisted her to her feet. His left eye was squeezed shut, but there was so much blood, En couldn't be sure there was much of an eye left. His other arm aimed, ready for a punch. Before he could take a swing at her, she kicked him in the groin and slid out of his grasp. She landed face down on the grass, the syringe still clutched in her fist. When she looked up, Cedric had his revolver pointed at her. He clutched his eye with one hand, and there was a feral look in his other. He laughed madly.
You really should have let me have my fun.
Then he pulled the trigger. Click. He cursed and opened the revolver's empty compartment. Then he looked at her, his eyes wide, as she lunged forward and stabbed the syringe into his leg. She would not be his victim tonight. He would be hers. Within moments, his limp body fell on top of her, his stomach on her back. She grunted and pushed him off, disgusted by the feel of him against her. He rolled over in the grass, staring with one eye into nothing. She shakily got to her feet and looked down at his body. She felt no remorse, not for him, not even for herself. Rather than breaking her, her surrender left her cold and steady with anger, with resolve. En picked up the envelope Cedric had given her before he'd slapped her. He'd said something about two players, which meant Levi was inside, alive, but preparing to play the shadow game. If she was going to save him, she needed to join him in the House of Shadows. She picked the revolver up from the ground. She only had three bullets. From the way the music carried, she assumed the House of Shadows was far from empty.
Could she burst into the room, gun raised, and force Semper to let Levi escape? Would that be enough? Or would she be shot down herself before she had a chance? She loaded the revolver and tucked it into her pocket. Her fingers brushed against the cool ribbon of the black satin mask Lola had given her. She pulled it out and tied it around her eyes, same as she'd done at Scrap Market. The mask covered very little of her face, but it offered at least a small amount of protection. If she and Levi managed to make it out of this alive, then no one could know who she was. Otherwise, the Phoenix Club could easily discover it was she who'd slain Cedric Torrin. With her lipstick reapplied and her blood-stained heel back on, N knocked on the front door of the House of Shadows. A huge man opened the door, and the loud music from inside blasted through her ears. He blinked at her for a few moments, and then his jaw dropped.
"It's you,"
Shark said, his golden tooth glinting. N tensed as she recognized him, one of the white boots from her first day in New Rains. He knew that she had a connection to Lourdes, the woman they'd killed here only a week before. He'd seen her without her mask. Her mind blanked except for one desperate idea. She took out the revolver, aimed it between his eyes, and pulled the trigger. The noise and force of it startled her so much she yelped. His body thudded to the floor, and she stood there for a few moments, her pulse a violent current, ready for someone to come running. No one did. She wondered if anyone had even heard over all the music, which pulsed loud enough to drown out everything. She stepped over his body and the pooling blood to enter the house. The cold shell inside of her hardened with each step. Apparently she'd left her soul back at Luckluster, probably back in Bellamy. The air smelled strongly of several kinds of smoke, and she scrunched her nose and tried to blow away the odor with the envelope. A light shone in the next room, but the hallway was otherwise cast in darkness. She shoved the revolver in her dress as she made her way through the house. A few men lying on the carpet glanced up blankly as she entered, but their attention was quickly recaptured by a giant pipe, shaped like a candlestick, on the table before them. N eyed a stairwell in the far corner of the room. A sinister force pulled her in that direction, guiding her toward her demise. She began to climb, her hand sliding up the smooth ebony railing. There was a single door at the top of the stairs. Behind it, she heard a rhythmic ticking, like a clock or a heartbeat. She hitched her breath and turned the knob, opening the door cautiously. Over a dozen lifeless faces peered at her as she stepped inside, but her gaze immediately fell on Levi. All the color drained from his face as he met her eyes. He was hunched in his chair as if it hurt him to straighten up, and an ugly red mark glared at the side of his neck. N's heart skipped in alarm. He'd been hurt again. N closed the door behind her, and the music from downstairs disappeared, as if nothing existed outside this room. The ticking, too, was gone. Maybe she hadn't really heard it at all.
"The other player, at last,"
one man said. N recognized him immediately. Chancellor Malcolm Semper, the father of the revolution, and her mother's killer. Her heart clenched, all the anger and grief and adrenaline seizing her at once.
"Please, take a seat, my dear."
She tried to reach for the revolver. This was it. She'd made it to the game in time to stop it. But her hand was frozen at her side, not from the Omerta, but some other power in the room. The same sinister force that had led her upstairs. She swallowed down a scream of panic.
"I believe you have Mr. Torren's letter, don't you?"
Semper asked. N froze. She didn't have any choices left. She was weaponless, powerless, and she had walked directly into their hands. She'd made a fatal error for the second time that night, and now it was too late. After a few moments of horror, she regained her composure enough to hand him Cedric's envelope. Semper tore it open and scanned the contents, then cleared his throat.
"It seems... what is your name?"
"Seance," she said, the name Lola had given her, the name her mother had once used long ago. Semper blinked, as if startled for a moment. Maybe he, too, glimpsed the ghost of Lourdes at the edges of his vision. He returned to Cedric's letter.
The Mr. Torren has recommended that Seance be the one to play.
What?
Levi hissed. En froze. What did that mean? Weren't they both supposed to play?
Well, with your background in cards, Mr. Glazier, you don't need to prove your prowess. Perhaps this newcomer should be given a chance to impress.
Levi shook his head. He looked utterly defeated.
Take a seat,
Semper urged her, and Anne carefully claimed the only empty one at the table. Every few moments she tried again to reach into her pocket for the revolver, but to no avail. If she ran, if she could run, that would mean leaving Levi here, and she'd already come this far. No matter how panicked she felt, she couldn't abandon him in his final moments. She wouldn't be able to live with herself afterward.
Don't bother eyeing the door, dear,
Semper said. Every monster in this city always found a pet name for her.
The game began the moment you stepped into the house. The rules are binding. There is no escaping, no cheating.
That explained why N couldn't reach for her gun. There was a magic to the game, like there was in Oaths. A magic she couldn't explain.
During the game, the player typically bets their own life,
Semper explained.
But since there are two guests, it will be Mr. Glazier's life on the line, and Seance the player.
En's heart sank. It should have been the other way around. She didn't know anything about cards.
Last time we did this, a younger woman started.
That was a mistake,
Semper snapped.
Besides, these two don't even know each other. Isn't that right?
They were referencing the game of Gabrielle Dondelaire, when it had been N's life on the line. They had no idea that the same child sat in front of them now, prepared to play the game a second time.
I've never heard of him, she answered.
Levi shot her an annoyed look, as if he could honestly be worrying about his ego at a time like this.
Players don't just walk through our door, the woman from earlier snapped. If you don't know him, then why are you here?
The words came easily.
To win,
Seance answered. Semper smiled.
People do not play this game to win, my dear. They play this game not to lose.
Day 10. Some say the City of Sin is a game, so before you arrive, ask yourself, dear reader, how much are you prepared to lose? The City of Sin, a guidebook. Where to go and where not to. N.
The rules are not that complicated, Semper started.
The room was so dark that he was merely a shadow across the table.
11 players and 22 kinds of shadow cards. In the beginning, every player will start off with 2.
He dealt out the silver cards and slid them to the players at the table.
Best not to look until you understand the rules, he said,
just as N was reaching for hers. She drew her hand back, heart pounding. The 9 other players stared at her with such detachment that she wondered if they were sleeping with their eyes open. If they were even interested in this game, where Levi's life was the prize. Semper continued his explanation as a man behind him placed a massive stack of silver-backed cards on the table. There were 10 decks of the shadow cards within the large one, which meant there were 10 of each kind of card. Each round, the players wishing to compete for that round's card would place 1 orb in the center. The objective was to collect all 22 shadow cards. The men standing around the table gave each of the players a silk pouch. When N opened the bag, she ran her fingers over tiny orbs made of black glass, identical to the one she kept within her nightstand at St. Morse.
These are unique orbs, Semper said. They're filled with your life force, not volts.
How is that possible? She asked, as though she'd never seen one before.
There are many mysteries in the House of Shadows. Why don't you hand the orbs to Levi?
How it works doesn't matter, En thought. All that matters is us making it out of here alive. But only one person had ever won the game,
and she'd died that night anyway. Anne slid Levi the bag. His face rigid, he placed an orb on the inside of his elbow and filled it with vault-like lightning that was gold instead of white,